Shooters, welcome back. If you're new, welcome in. We have over 150 episodes for you to choose from. I know it can be a little daunting to figure out where to start, but most of these episodes are very timeless, and so you can go back and listen to any of these at any time. We've had the opportunity to speak with some of the best players and basketball minds our state has to offer. So we're sure that you'll find something in here that you'll like and enjoy, but also learn something along the way. We're just retired hoopers turned coaches that have a true passion for the game of basketball. We're trying to share that with you, have some fun along the way, and promote the kids, coaches, and programs throughout this state that are working hard each and every day. If there's something you like, please let us know. Comment, like, follow, spread the word. And as always, shooters shoot.
Well, Coach Helly, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coach, we're excited to get you on. Excited to learn a little bit more about your story and how you got into coaching. We were talking a little bit off air, though. This daylight savings, man, I tell you what, this is a grind. I know we're going into the start of games here for you guys. But as you mentioned, you guys start early in the morning. So you go to work when it's dark and you go home when it's dark. How are some ways that you can kind of overcome that here for the next few months?
I think the biggest thing, you know, it's like anything, it's probably like you guys, is this work-life balance, you know, that everybody talks about now. You know, it's like I was telling you earlier, you know, I have two teams. You know, I have a JV team and a varsity team. JV works out at 6:30 in the morning. Varsity goes at 8 o'clock in the morning. Usually varsity's done at 9:30, 9:45, you know, something like that. And then I'll go and, you know, I'll go work out, you know, and take a couple hours to myself. And then usually I come back to the office, you know, about noon, 12:30, something like that, and tackle the rest of the day. You know, guys are in and out of the office all day trying to, you know, you're trying to prepare for the next day's practice or the next game or whatever the situation is, you know, paperwork. It's, you know, at this level, you know, you're a jack of all trades, master of none. You know, you got to do everything. So, you know, and let's be honest, there's some days, you know, my athletic director will tell me at 3 o'clock to go home, you know, and go home and enjoy the rest of the day. You just got to kind of find your time, you know, when you got to work longer and when you got to work shorter, you know, and just as long as you get it done, that's all that matters. You know, you prepare your team for the next day in practice, you prepare your team, you know, for the next game, whatever the situation is.
Definitely some load management on the coaching side of things too, right? That's just not for players.
That's right. You know, and I think the biggest thing is, no matter what level you're coaching at, whether it's middle school, you know, even younger than middle school, you know, you're coaching a travel team, you're coaching middle school, high school, college, whatever level, you know, you really got to find, you know, good assistants can take some of that barrier off. You know, and I got two good assistants that do a lot, you know, and they're the same as me, you know, they're jack of all trades, master of none, just because of all the stuff that we have and trying to manage two teams and a lot of guys that are between the age of 18 and 19. And this is the first time that, you know, they've been away from home. And now everybody knows in our society, kids are making decisions for the first time in their life ever. You know, mom and dad aren't there. And it's a huge adjustment. You know, not only are you a coach, now you're a parent, you know, and you're dealing with, you know, whatever the problems may be. You know, it's like I've learned a long time ago. In coaching, there's no surprises. You know, there's no surprises. You just never know what's going to walk through your door and who's going to walk through your door and what the problem could be.
With the JV and varsity coach, how do coaching responsibilities get separated with that? Are you at most of the JV stuff, or do you let your assistants handle that most of the time? What does that look like?
When we first start working out, you know, we're allowed 8 hours in the fall, and then we're allowed 8 hours in the spring as well. And then when the season gets going, we're allowed 20. So up until probably the middle of October, I'm basically coaching both teams. You know, you got to show those guys that are on JV, you got to show them appreciation just as much as you show the varsity guys appreciation. You know, and then it comes to a point where I give my assistant coach, who's in charge of the JV, I give him the reins and I'm like, okay, here's the deal. This is your team now. You know, I'm here every morning. I'll be in the office every morning. If you need help, you come see me. But by the middle of October, then I kind of switch over to be just full-time varsity coach. And I have two assistants, one full-time guy, one part-time guy. Part-time guy, you know, I leave him in charge of the JV. You know, it gives him valuable experience, valuable coaching experience. He's the head coach. It's like I tell him, you know, I want you to run kind of what we're going to do, but you can run a variation. This is your program. You know, you do what you want to do with it and, you know, take the reins. Like I said, you know, if he needs help, you know, he can ask. I'll come out and help practice. Otherwise, I just kind of hands off with the JV program and just kind of let him do it. Obviously, varsity is a handful in itself in getting those guys prepared. And so I got to focus most of my attention on those guys, you know, trying to prepare them.
Having a team and the setup that you do, obviously you only have these guys for 2 years. And so getting an opportunity to, one, get them caught up, break some of those high school habits, get ready for the college level. Then they become sophomores. You're still trying to teach them. The next thing you know, they're gone and you really don't have a ton of what we would call, you know, the senior leadership. And so you mentioned kind of jack of all trades. Like, you're kind of doing it all. Like, you can't ever just take a year and say, I have a really good group of seniors and watch these guys lead, because 2 years isn't enough time. We all know that, to figure out this world of college basketball. And so what kind of are some unique struggles that you kind of see on a day-to-day basis with the fact that it's a quick 2 year process for you?
I think the biggest thing that I've noticed probably, I don't know, let's say the last 10 years, kids don't handle peer criticism very well. It becomes a bickering match. A sophomore gets after a freshman, you know, there's not that level of respect yet, because they just don't understand, well, how come this guy's yelling at me? And I see it all the time with just pure criticism. It's tough. Kids don't want to hear it. Kids got a lot of answers. You know, they got a lot of answers. Let's be real, to me too. You know, they don't like someone, yeah, you know, and we've all been in that boat before where we played and a coach tells you something and you got to bite your tongue. And nowadays with the world, the way it is, of entitlement, there isn't a lot of biting of the tongue. You know, they'll just tell you. I think it goes back. So we have four guys that are back from a year ago, two starters, two guys that came off the bench. And, you know, they're really bought in. I learned this a long time ago, you know, at this level. I learned this from our old baseball coach. And it's so, so valuable. You know, you draw an imaginary line down the middle of the basketball court or a classroom. And at our level, you got guys that straddle this line. You know, they're not fully on the line. They're straddling it. You got the freshmen who straddle it, who are going to tell you a lot of stuff about what they did in high school and how successful they were. And I was able to do this and this and this. Okay, great. And then you got your sophomores who are kind of worried about where they're going to go in a year, you know, and what kind of year they're going to have at the present time to go someplace the following year. And you've got to try to convince those guys, those sophomores, if you're on the line, fully on the line, 2 feet on the line, all that stuff in the future is going to take care of itself. You know, and hopefully your freshmen will see that and start gravitating towards those guys and being on the line, being committed. High school's over. So many of these kids, you know, they just don't understand. A college coach, I'll be honest, really doesn't care what you did in high school anymore. It's over. You didn't win me any games, lose me any games. You didn't score any points. It's you're here now. You got to be committed to wherever you're at right now, you know, and you just hope at our level that you get some kids that are sophomores that are mature, that can have a voice and can back it up in practice every day, workouts every day, where they kind of become that leader, you know, show that leadership, you know, that you're looking for out of a 2 year kid.
That's a really neat perspective. I never really took the time to think about that, but you're 100% correct in saying that freshman year, it feels like there's a lot of time. It doesn't matter what level you're at. It feels like there's a lot of time looking in the rearview mirror and seeing like, hey, this is kind of what I did, or this is like, I'm trying to use that to, you know, to build confidence, but I kind of get stuck back there. And then, like you said, then you get to that sophomore year and I can see where a lot of those guys are thinking, you know, what's next? Like, okay, now where am I going? And so for you to be able to come in and try to weave these two things going on and, oh yeah, go out and win some basketball games, definitely is a challenge. And definitely, I would imagine, is a tug of war that you've had with yourself many a nights when you're supposed to open. But so how big is then the recruiting element come into that then, as far as making sure that you're going out and getting the right kids and the kids that are going to fit what you're trying to do and trying to accomplish there at your program?
First and foremost, I just want good guys, you know, and I think the two biggest things that you have to bring every day is you have to bring a really good work ethic and a really good attitude. You know, if you bring a good attitude, you're going to have a good work ethic. If you have a bad attitude, the work ethic isn't going to come. To me, you know, at this level, it's not worth having a guy that's kind of on the fence a lot of times with stuff in practice, attitude and effort, really good one day, really bad. You know, you gotta find that consistency, you know, of every single day. And let's be honest, you know, recruiting is a crapshoot. Sometimes you think you're going to get a really good player and he doesn't pan out. And then sometimes you just think, well, let's just give this guy an opportunity. And the light bulb comes on and he seizes the opportunity and he becomes a really good player. That's probably at any level. You know, that's probably the same thing in the NBA. You just never know. You just never know until, you know, they get away from mom and dad. They're making decisions on their own. What do they bring on a consistent basis every single day? You know, that's my biggest thing that I preach every single day. You got to be an everyday guy. Everyday guys earn trust the fastest. We all know in athletics and workplace and all that, you got to be able to trust the people that are making decisions for you. And if you don't trust them, I just don't know if it's going to work, you know, whether it be in the workforce or whether it be in athletics of any sport.
That's good. That's a very good life lesson and one that can be tough at times. And as maturity happens, it feels like you start to understand that a little bit more. So sticking with the recruiting, is there a philosophy or what do you kind of, I know you said you targeted down your list. It looks like you got a couple local guys and then you kind of got some people from all over. And so is this an opportunity in which you guys are getting out on the road heavy? Are you guys watching, breaking down a bunch of film? How are you going out and how are you attacking these kids to make sure you're getting the right kids for your program?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you want to try to get the best kids in the state of Iowa, you know, and obviously you want to try to stay within, let's say, an hour radius of Fort Dodge and Iowa Central. If there's a kid within that hour radius, obviously we want to get him. And then you just kind of keep going, expand out a little more in the state. And then like anything, you got connections, you got people that know who you are, that send you, you know, my one assistant, he's from Cedar Rapids. My other assistant, you know, he's got connections to Milwaukee. He's got connections to Atlanta. You know, he was born and raised until about sixth grade, I think, in Milwaukee. And then he moved to Atlanta, Georgia, you know, so he's got some connections down there. And you just kind of find pockets where kids are, you know, where some schools don't go recruit and, you know, coaches follow and send you. And I think the other big thing is social media too. You know, in today's world, there's millions of threads every day on Twitter, you know, 2023, 24, 25 kids, you know, dropping their film. And you just kind of, you know, start scrolling and start looking and see what's out there. You know, in recruiting like us, you know, we can go to AAU events and we can contact kids in the summer. But let's be honest, let's be real. There's not a lot of kids that are playing this summer that are interested in Iowa Central going junior college. They all got bigger, far bigger dreams and goals than that. You know, we'll go, but we don't necessarily start recruiting right now those kids just because, no, I'm not interested. And then all of a sudden you hit them back up in November or December. Yeah, now I'm interested. Stuff fell through. Recruiting didn't go as what they thought. And the next thing you know, you're in the door. And the last time you weren't even close to being in the door.
Yeah, that does make a big difference. And like you said, being able to kind of catch the kid at the right time, but, you know, be persistent and, you know, obviously be in the know. You got to be out there to know what's going on to be able to even have a chance of these kids, and these kids got to know who you are as well. One of the local kids that you have that I actually watched quite a bit because he was down here in our area, Riley Edwards from Southeast Polk, a freshman for you guys. How's that transition been for Riley here so far in the first 2 months of the season here?
I would say the last 2 weeks have been a lot better. You know, I think the big thing, Riley transitioned from high school to college playing without the basketball in his hands. So many high school kids, anytime that ball is in their hands, it's a good shot. Well, now all of a sudden shot selection comes into play in college, and that possession is worth a heck of a lot more, and we got to maximize that possession. You know, and he's done a really good job probably the last 2 to 3 weeks of realizing I don't need to score every time I touch the ball. I don't need to make a play every time I touch the ball. You know, he's kind of found his niche. Guys have kind of figured him out. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. And he's probably, like I said, in the last 3 weeks of practice, he's probably 45% from the three. You know, I mean, he's knocking them down. And it's like I tell him every day, it's not the quantity of the shot, it's the quality. And if you can shoot quality shots every day, they're going to start going in. You know, where you start hunting shots, you're shooting bad shots and your confidence goes downhill real quick when you shoot, you know, quantity. If you shoot quality and you shoot 4 or 5 shots and you make 3, my confidence is sky high. Instead of 0 for 5 or 1 for 5, oh man, my shot's not very good. Now I'm pressing a little bit and all that. It makes a huge difference. You know, Adam, you could probably attest to that. You know, you shoot quality shots and they go in, man. Your confidence goes through the roof.
You're exactly right, Coach. And that's an interesting way to think about that. You know, I had a coach in high school tell me quantity in practice, quality in games. And, you know, I think that's a good motto to live by if you're out there, especially if you're a shooter. We ask this to a lot of the players we have on the pod. As a coach, what do you think the biggest transition to high school, or excuse me, from high school to college is? I know obviously with different kids it's different, but what have you seen in your experience? What is that biggest transition to kind of get used to as an incoming freshman?
Always having a sense of urgency. In college, it doesn't matter what your opinion is. There's going to be 5 college basketball players on the court. That's what that opposing coach thinks. And you got to guard all 5. The kid in the corner that just stands to take a spot is not in college basketball, regardless of what level. You got to play your butt off every single possession, offensively and defensively. I think that's probably one of the biggest steps that kids have to understand when they go from high school to college is how hard you truly got to play every single possession. You can't coast. The days of playing 40 minutes are over. Some of these high school kids, they played 32 minutes. It didn't matter if they were 10 for 10, 1 for 10, 5 assists, 1 turnover, or 1 assist to 5 turnovers. They were going to play. And I think that's the biggest thing is this. Just that transition of just playing hard every single possession, you know, and just the value of, you know, the value of offense when you have the ball and getting stops when you need them on defense. Leading in, probably the second biggest thing is defense. You got to be able to guard, you know, you got to be able to. And if you can't, it's going to be a struggle. It's not that you can't, you know, it's do you want to, you know, and it's a mentality. People always say, you know, we say it probably as adults, you know, the NBA doesn't, they don't play no defense. Nah, they play defense. Those guys are just really good offensively. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're playing defense, but they're just really good offensively. And that's the biggest thing is those things, just a sense of urgency, playing hard every possession. And you've got to be able to guard.
You mentioned it earlier as well that, you know, from high school to college, those possessions matter more. You know, every time you have the ball and you don't score, it's a big deal, you know, and that is a mindset of coaching staffs. That's a mindset of your players and really, you know, hitting that home, obviously for those new, obviously for those new kids, new players and incoming freshmen, whatever it may be, is a big deal. Yeah. So I think you're exactly right. I totally agree with you on that. I guess if we're looking forward to our upcoming season coming up here, Coach, and let's just say, hypothetically, we're talking to you in March or April. What would a successful season look like for your varsity team?
I told our sophomores that are coming back next year. Last year we went 15-15. We played really well down the stretch, January and February, and in the last regular season game in March. And we have four guys coming back, like I said, two starters, two guys that came off the bench. And I told them last spring and I told them this fall, I said, we got to take this next step. We got to get to 20. I'm hoping that we can get there, you know, and in that conversation, you know, be at 20. And I think we're playing 29 games, be at 20, you know, 21-8, 20-9, somewhere right in there, you know, maybe even better. Who knows? You know, you got to have luck. You got to stay healthy. You know, maybe some guys on the opposing team get hurt. You know, maybe we're shooting it at a high clip, whatever the situation is. But I think that we can get there. You know, the big thing is in these early games is understanding our roles. What do I need to do to make this team really successful and be really good at it? And then hopefully by then, you know, we've got to figure it out. Who's our main guy that's going to get us a bucket when we need it? Who's going to be the guy that's going to get a rebound, a defensive stop, you know, those kinds of things. Hopefully we're right in the hunt, you know, at the end. You know, we're in the top four and we're right there.
Your philosophy, you know, your coaching philosophy. I know that, you know, at a community college, obviously, as we've referenced, you know, you have these kids for 2 years, you know, maybe even a redshirt three. You know, what are some of those philosophies that you are every single year? This is what we're doing. And then maybe even what are some that, you know, maybe can are kind of fluid, you know, that you kind of match up to your personnel when the time comes?
I think the big thing that we're going to try to guard people. The older I get, you know, and I'm still fairly young in life, but the older I get in coaching, you know, the more I worry about defense. And I let, you know, my two assistants worry more about offense. You know, and I think that's the key is we're going to guard, we're going to be tough. You know, my big thing is accountability, responsibility. So many times, you know, we're going to be held accountable on the court. I kind of got this old school approach, but yet a new school approach. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to bark and I'm going to bite, but I'm also going to pat you on the back and tell you, you know, good job. Going back to your previous question, you know, Adam, the big thing is execution. Just watching games on TV, watching high school games, you know, like I always tell our guys, we're going to execute a set play. We're just not going to run it. You know, and I see it so often when we're starting to implement what we're going to do offensively and when we start putting in set plays, guys just run them. They just run them. No, we're not going to run them. That's just a waste of time. We can do that we can go out and run on Sunday is what I always tell them. You know, we need to execute this, you know, and get our timing down and execute it because you never know when that execution is going to be needed the most. You know, you're down one, you need a big bucket, or you're up, you know, you're up two and you got the basketball and we call set play. You got to be able to execute it. And that's my big thing is just, you know, toughness and guard and just execute, you know, and try not to beat ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the biggest thing. You know, we don't do nothing fancy. You know, we run dribble drive. We spread people out. We put five guys on the perimeter and, you know, my main goal for our team every year and for our guys, there's this JUCO stigmatism. A JUCO game broke out. It's kind of like a softball game where you got a snowball fight. You know, the ball's going all over the field. A JUCO game where it's just up and down, balls flying all over. My goal is to make these guys play like a four-year school, you know, a four-year guy, you know, regardless of what level. I just want you to play like a four-year school team. You know, not a JUCO team. And that comes back to executing, you know, being tough and basketball IQ, which I'm trying to teach every single day. I feel like that's one of the biggest things that's probably missing in today's game with a lot of kids is basketball IQ. You know, we had a guy that just retired, you know, from playing overseas. He played 10 years. He said the biggest difference in playing overseas is we played one day and practiced six. In America, we play six and practice one.
Right.
Makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Makes a huge difference.
How big a difference do you think that just the AAU world and the style of play has to do with that? I mean, everybody's working out with the trainer every time everybody's doing something. You know what I mean? Like the days of the basketball just getting rolled out and being like, all right, the 10 players, okay, the best, you're on that team, you're on that, and splitting it up, throwing and going and playing, like, those days are so far in the past. It just seems like we, you know, are a balance between having to think the game and just being a robot, because this is where my coach or trainer told me to run, and this is the move, and this is the Euro that I've practiced 1,000 times, so I'm going to do use this every time instead of see and react, you know. And so that's, I would assume that you would agree that that makes a big difference as far as style and what these kids come to you with.
100% basketball, and let's be honest, basketball is still a half court game, as much as everybody's, you know, in every sport, offensive minded, offense. Basketball and football, you know, is run, you know, run sets up the pass. Basketball is still a half court game. You still got to be able to execute in the half court. And if you can't, you're really going to struggle. It's kind of like what you said, Brian, about, you know, trainers teaching them all these moves, you know. That's one of the biggest things that we got to break when we get kids is the between the legs, behind the back, step backs. No, it's a game of quickness. As soon as you catch that basketball, you know what you're going to do. You're either going to dribble it, you're going to pass it, or you're going to shoot it. And it's a straight line drive. You can't be doing all that stuff. You know, it goes back to quality or quantity of shots. Mm-hmm. You know, because you watch those guys that are doing the dribbles, the six dribbles into a shot, that's a quantity shot. Mm-hmm. That's not a quality shot. I don't know. It's our world is just, it's AAU. And like, it's like what you said, it's AAU, it's trainers. It's not going to your hoop in the driveway or going down to the park and just shoot, you know, just getting a basketball and just shooting, or just going down and playing one-on-one with your buddies or two-on-two, or, you know, what we used to call, you know, gorilla ball, where you'd throw it and just hammer each other and beat each other up and try to score points. You know, people don't do that anymore.
That's fun. That's the next thing I was going to say is I feel like that the just go out and get buckets, the competitive mindset part of it has gone away. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just have the, hey, let's just find a way to get a win here type of deal, you know, in a pickup basketball game. Cause it's like, oh, I'm not going to play pickup. I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to go work out with my trainer, and I'm going to go work on this combo move that I've been working on, you know. And you never actually just have to grind out a bucket, you know, like we kind of did growing up playing at the park or whatever it was. And so you see it. I mean, and I feel like we've seen it for a while. We're just seeing it more and more now as we get further down this road. And, you know, on the flip side, we're seeing some people who can just shoot it at a ridiculously high clip that we didn't see either back when we were playing. And so there's definitely a balance in there somewhere, coach. I just don't know where we find it or how we're able to get the best of both worlds, but hopefully eventually we can get there.
The biggest pet peeve that I see in our guys, and I know other people see it, is our guys will go out in the gym and they'll play one-on-one, but you only get one shot. So I shoot it, I miss it, or I make it, the ball's dead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then that stuff carries over when you're playing 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4 to 5-on-5. One shot, it's just one shot. You know, everybody gets one shot. Whoever invented that game should be run over, because come on now, that's not basketball. You know, you get one shot, that's it.
Then you only have to play defense for 5-6 seconds, right, coach, yeah. And then you can just give up and get the ball.
Yeah.
Like, a coach's dream.
We talk about that all the time. Like, our rule in on defensive rebounding is take one step. Contest the shot and take one step. If you take one step, you're going to be in defensive position. You take any more, long shots going over your head. Or if you don't take a step, you're going to get beat. You know, and so many of our guys, they just really struggle with taking that initial first step because of this one-on-one game where you only get one shot. Like, it makes zero sense to me. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's funny. That is a good observation, though. I would agree with you 100% there, coach. So, coach, you talked about trying to take that next step and get to that 20-win plateau this season. Obviously, taking a look at your guys' league, you guys have a tough league. It's you talked about every play, every night. That speaks to your league and what you guys have to do. And so as you kind of go through things here a little bit, As we're talking to you here, you know, you do have one win under your belt already. Here we go. You're well on your way. And I know you guys will be playing on Thursday as well. And so walk me through a little bit as far as your league. You know, honestly, don't know a ton. Obviously, you have the likes of Iowa Lakes and DMAC and Kirkwood, some of those perennials that are always up there. But overall, just kind of give me on a quick little once over on what your guys' league will look like this year.
Based on preseason coaches poll, you know, like what you just said, you got Kirkwood, you got DMAC, and you got Iowa Lakes. You know, they've been there every year right at the top. And then you kind of got everybody else that's just trying to fight their way to get up there, you know, and probably going into the year this year, it's probably no different. It's a battle every single night. You know, it doesn't matter if a team is 0-4 in the league, you still got to show up, you know, and I think the biggest thing, like I tell kids all the time, recruits all the time, you know, yeah, we're a junior college league, but I don't feel like we play like a junior college league. You know, we got good players. You know, that obviously helps. But I think we got really good coaches, you know, in our league that understand what it takes to get these guys to the next level and to give them an opportunity to play when they get to the next level, whatever level that is, Division III, NAI, Division II, Division I, whatever it is. They put them in a position, you know, to play right away. And I think that's the biggest thing is – you know, each team kind of has their own little niche of what they do. You know, some teams are big and they pound it inside. Some teams are small and spread you out. And it's a difficult matchup every single night. You know, you definitely gotta study film, watch film, try to find the weaknesses and then try to exploit them and you know, and then get back on defense and try to take away what they're going to try to do offensively, you know, against you. It's going to be an interesting league race again. You know, like I said earlier, you know, Iowa Lakes, DMAC, and Kirkwood are probably, you know, a couple steps ahead of everybody else. And then there's a bunch of us that are just kind of right there, you know. But I also think that all of us that are left, can we knock off the top 1, 2, and 3? Yeah, I think we can, you know. And that's why it's just going to be another dogfight from game one to, I think we have 16 games now, 16 league games, you know. So it's going to be every night. There's no nights off, that's for sure.
And that's good, though, too. It definitely makes it a lot more fun, the parity and the ability for somebody that, you know, is in the middle to go and get a win or even two against some of the top teams. And then, you know, obviously iron sharpens iron and prepare yourself for the postseason is what we're all trying to do and make sure that we're ready and playing the best basketball at the end of the year. And a tough league always helps in that. And so be anxious to see kind of how things shake out. Like you said, you have a lot of really good players, really good coaches throughout that league, a ton of Iowa schools in there with a few from around the area. And so they'll be anxious to see kind of how things shake out. With that though, Coach, I want to transition into you and ultimately what got you to Iowa Central. I know this was quite a while ago, 2002, I believe. Is that your first year that you came to Iowa Central? And walk us on that journey a little bit. What, why, and how did you find yourself there at Iowa Central?
Well, I'm an alum. So I went to school here I graduated high school in 1995, and I went to school here at Iowa Central from 95 to 97. And then I left, transferred, went to an NAI school called the Turbo College in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. played 2 years there. And then it was the spring of 2000. Coach Pilcher, who was the longtime coach here for 40 years, and obviously was my coach, called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, I got an assistant's job opening. You know, would you be interested?" And I'll be honest with you, I really didn't have a clue what I was going to do after college. You know, I got a little part-time job at the Boys and Girls Club in La Crosse, Wisconsin, running like a little kids basketball league, and coached a couple teams, and you know, kind of sparked my interest a little bit. And I'm like, you know what? Why not? So I came back, and it was in August of 2000 was my first year here. So this will be year number 24. Say what you want about Fort Dodge. It's like any place. You know, it's got good people. You know, if you want to hang around good people, it's got good people. If you want to get in trouble, you can find trouble. Iowa Central is a good school. You know, we've done a really good job of, you know, per se, keeping up with the Joneses, you know, with facilities. We got great dorms. We got a great cafeteria. You know, we got a really nice weight room, really nice gym to play in, you know, so that makes it a heck of a lot easier to stay, you know, and plus you just work with really good people. You know, I think that's the biggest thing is you got supportive people. Other coaches are supportive. The administration is supportive, you know, so it gives you an opportunity to do something that you really, truly love to do, you know, but still have a life as well, you know, where you're not a Division I guy, where it's basically life or death and win or else. You know, they still want us to win here, don't get me wrong, but they still understand the grand scheme of things of where we're at and what we're doing and all that.
After the playing days, you weren't gung-ho like this is college coaching or coaching in general is what I want to do. You were still kind of just trying to figure it out before you got that phone call.
I was 22 years old and probably like a lot of people, like a lost dog, you know, like, what do you do now? You know, the ball stopped per se, you know, probably kind of like you, Adam, the basketball was kind of your identity, you know, and now all of a sudden, now what do I do? You know, now I got to go out in the real world and try to find a job. And, you know, what's crazy about it is my first year, you know, I was part-time. I wasn't even full-time. I was part-time making $1,000 a month. I made $12,000. I was working the grounds crew at Iowa Central, mowing grass, taking care of the baseball field, you know, just trying to make ends meet. 6 months after I was done, I'll never forget it, I got my first student loan bill in the mail. And I called home and I'm like, Mom, how the hell am I going to pay for this? I'm making $1,000 a month. I think my first payment was like over 400. I'm like, life's over. I got to do something else. I just stuck around that first year and kind of busted my butt. And then I got promoted to full time. And then I've just kind of worked my way up, you know, from there.
So I want to get to the rest of that journey here, but so 2002, now help me understand this. My maybe understanding of it is a little foggy, but how did it work with Nick Ford and the Palmer, basically getting the whole crew to come to Iowa Central? What was the deal with it? Because that was about that time, right? That had to have been 2002.
Yeah, I think so. Like 2002, 2003, maybe somewhere in there. So I went to a game when those guys were juniors, and I can't remember who they played. They were playing in Pomeroy, where their home gym was. And I knew they were good, but I didn't realize how good until I saw them in person. And the first kid that caught my eye was a kid by the name of Dustin Thompson. He was like a 6'4", springy, run like a deer. Not really a great shooter, but he could attack the rim and he just played hard. And then you had Nick Ford, who was as big as a pencil, but could just shoot the hell out of it, you know? And so obviously we started recruiting those two kids, you know, really, really hard. And then their head coach at the time was a guy by the name of Brian Heide. And Brian Heide and Coach Pilcher were really good friends. Had known each other a long time. And I think Brian called him and said, hey, I think they all want to play basketball.
That's awesome.
And coach is like, you know what? Let's see if this translates over to success at this level. You know, that's part of being a community college is giving kids an opportunity. You know, and they wanted an opportunity. You know, the starting center on the time, Alex Poppin, he went over to football, had a really good career in football. Dustin, his senior year, actually broke his foot and never got back healthy. You know, just kind of always was always just a half a step to a step slower than what he was, kind of lost his explosiveness. Obviously, Nick Ford was the best one out of that whole group. You know, just because he could shoot it and just high IQ. You know, those were back in the days where you went to the open gym with the high school coach and you were doing one ball, two ball dribbling, and you were doing, you know, reading down screens and coming off down screens, ready to shoot, just breaking the game down, you know, and that's how those guys got really, really good.
And they played together a lot too, and you could tell that as well. They were so I actually played against those guys in your actually in Iowa Central Summer League at your guys's place, and had to try to attempt to guard Nick Ford. I mean, talk about trying to guard Rip Hamilton and the number of screens that those guys would set for him. And like you said, he wasn't big, he wasn't really strong, but he had sharp ass elbows, and Dustin was setting picks for him. And every second you turned around and all he needed was a second, it was a nightmare to play against those guys. And like you said, Nick was a hell of a player too. But I just remember all of those guys going to Iowa Central, and I was just like, well, there's got to be a story behind this. How did this work that they just like, hey, let's just, I mean, because obviously those guys won a shit ton of games in high school too. And so it's like, how are all these guys just going to go? And like you said, that's a good example of the next level works for some guys, and some guys it just doesn't. But there can be a lot of success and fun had, playing with your buddies and getting an opportunity to do what those guys did. And so that's neat. That's a really cool story. And so then as the assistant, you mentioned you became full time. What's it like learning from a legend? And what would you say that probably your three biggest lessons either on the court that you learn from Coach Pilcher?
The biggest thing is execution. You got to be able to execute. You just can't roll the ball out, because it's like this whole conversation that we've had. You're dealing with 18, 19-year-olds that are finally making a decision for themselves. And one of the hardest things you got to learn as a coach is once they step foot on that court, you lose all control. And you just hope that you've practiced enough of execution in practice that it carries over to the game when you need it the most. That's probably one of the biggest things that I learned from him. I would say, probably a couple other things is one, probably when I was playing, is just toughness. I'll never forget it. And this you couldn't do this nowadays. I remember we were doing a drill. I think it was 4-on-4, and I was on defense, and the guy scored, and I took the ball from the net and I rolled it back to half court. And I was standing on the baseline, matter of fact, right outside of my office right here. And the next thing you know, that ball was coming straight at my nose. He flung it right at me as like, it felt like 100 mph. He chewed my ass and said, "You ever make a pass like that again, you're going to be on the run, on the line running." Okay. I got the hint, and I think toughness, and trying to get that out of the guys and trying to make them tougher, and putting them in situations where it's, you got to be tough. And then just having relationships past when you're done playing basketball or done coaching these guys. There's been so many guys that I still stay in touch with that I've coached. Hell, I'll go over to Nick Ford's house because he still lives in town, and we'll watch Iowa football games and hang out, and drink beer and have a good time, and it's like anything, you don't realize it until you get older. You don't want to hold grudges and you don't want to burn bridges, because you just never know when you may need those guys. And obviously those guys will need you.
That's great. And it, like you said, that relationship and that balance sometimes takes a little maturity to be able to see and understand that what tough love looks like. And that coach did have my best interest in mind as you're going through. But the moment that you realize that, you can understand the power behind a coach and what they're able to provide for us as well. And so going through then, once you had the opportunity to become, or you knew the head coaching position was going to come available, take me through that process, because that can be hard. Someone who, has 15 plus years as an assistant at a school that you played at, you've been an assistant under a longtime coach and legend. How did you not allow yourself to feel like a shoo-in to get the head job? And then how did you go about that process? And then ultimately, what was the feeling once you received the notice that you were going to go ahead and move up to the head position?
The biggest thing was Coach Pilcher never talked about retirement, never hinted, never talked about it. And through the years, it's kind of like a player. As a coach, you earn more trust. And I had been here for a while. I had earned coach's trust on the court, and he gave me a bigger role, And in my thought process, I wasn't thinking, oh man, he's getting ready to retire. Maybe he's setting me up, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, we never talked about it. And then this would be his fifth year that he's been gone. So what is that? 2018, January of 2018, him and I were sitting in this very office and he just said, Chad, I'm done. And I met with Kevin Twaite, our athletic director at the time, who currently still is our athletic director. He goes, I told him and I gave him the recommendation that you be the next head coach. That was probably one of the biggest secrets, the hardest secret that I had to keep quiet for 3 months. You know, I didn't even tell my parents. You know, I didn't tell anybody. I just kept it to myself, went about my job every single day, you know, just trying to earn my stripes, per se, you know, that I was ready to take this next step, you know, even though you don't realize that you're not ready, you know, when you do get that position, that job. But, you know, you obviously can't show it. You just got to kind of run with it. You know, I mean, here it is year five, and I still don't sometimes think that I'm ready. You know, a new season, new guys every year, you know, like, are we doing it the right way? You know, should we do something different? Do we continue to do what we're doing? You're always evaluating, reevaluating yourself, your program, your assistant coaches, all that stuff. And then, you know, once our season was over in March, you know, coach retired, I was named head coach, and all of a sudden it's baptism by fire. You know, here's the keys. It's yours. I'm out. I still talk to Coach Pilcher, you know, on a weekly basis, especially during the season. You know, he watches every game online. If he doesn't come to the game, you know, we talk on a weekly basis. So I still have that comfort, that security blanket, per se, you know, but he doesn't really, you know, he just kind of is very, very vanilla. You know, I thought your guards did this. I thought your big guys did this. You know, he doesn't say, hey, you need to do this, this, or this. You know, he kind of, ever since day one, when our season was over that year in 2018, he just kind of rode off in the sunset and said, it's yours.
So other than that desk that I saw you unload, I think on Twitter, that looked like maybe it was from maybe World War One. Anything else that's changed right away?
Probably the biggest thing is his desk used to face this wall that is basically the gym on the other side. And I turned it because his back was always to the door. And so I turned it so I can see out the door now. You know, that was one of the biggest things. And I got rid of his desk and got a new desk. Got my assistant a new desk too, which was a huge upgrade compared to the World War One desk. You know, that was wooden and creaky and about to fall apart. But a lot of the stuff, you know, there's subtle changes, but there's also still, you know, a lot of the same stuff as well. You know, we still, you know, as much as Twitter hates it and social media hates it, we still do three-man weave, five-man weave every day before we start practice. Every day. Ball doesn't touch the floor. Two-handed pass, everything is off the glass. You know, the next man who's supposed to get the pass gets the rebound. Everybody touches the baseline. We did that. Coach probably did it for 40 years, and we still do it every day. Every day. Three-man weave, as boring as it is, and people say, you know, it has no translation to the game. Well, it translates to me whether we're ready to practice or not. How many times can we screw up, mm-hmm. or can we perfect three times, three-man weave, 10 layups in a row, five-man weave, 10 layups in a row? Can we get 20 layups in a row? It's kind of an indication of how practice is going to go.
That's really good. They were talking on the broadcast actually this weekend about Mahomes and some of his attention to detail. And he said as a kid, he watched A-Rod hit off a tee every day, and that was like his indication that, like, well, if the best baseball player in the world's hitting off a tee every day, then I can do some of the little things too. I can go out there and do three-man weave and do it the best I possibly can, even though we're not going to do this in a game. And so So that's good. That's really neat. As far as the interview process, did you have to fill an application? Did you have to go through the whole interview thing, or were you kind of, you had the recommendation of a legend. Did they just kind of give you the job, or what was the deal there on the process?
If it was today, I'd probably have to go through the interview process, but it was 5 years ago and I didn't have to.
That's great.
That's good.
Coach Twait pulled me in his office and you know, just said, you know, I know coaches talk to you. When the season's over, coach is obviously done. And, you know, you'll be named the head men's basketball coach, you know. So
awesome.
You know, it was a total surprise. I'll put it that way. You know, I wasn't expecting it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, let's be real. Everybody thinks that Kirk Ferentz is going to coach until he dies. You know, and it was no different here, mm-hmm. You know, and I thought coach was going to coach forever, you know, but sometimes you just get to that point in your career where those kids stay the same age, you get a little bit older and obviously you want to move on and kind of enjoy what's left of life.
Interesting to kind of hear it from, obviously the perspective, but a lot of good lessons learned there, coach. Appreciate you sharing that with us. We like to end our episodes with a little section we call rapid fire. Brian's gonna hit you with a couple questions, some about hoops, some maybe about Hawkeye football, and you just you let us know what comes to your head right off the top of your head.
We'll be on here all night if we talk Hawkeye football.
I only allowed one question about Hawkeye football, so
you'd mentioned a few things along the way. I wanted to jump in, but I was like, I'll save it for the end. But
so I tweeted on Saturday, I really don't think Iowa fans are that upset about Iowa's offense. I think what really grinds them, what really makes them mad, is they're winning. They find a way to win. Yeah. I really truly believe, like, they want, Iowa fans want Iowa to lose, but somehow they win. And I really truly believe that's what pisses them off.
I saw a stat today that said over the last three college football seasons, teams with 170 yards of total offense or fewer are 4-49 over the last three seasons. Iowa has all four of those wins. That's like the most Iowa stat ever right there. So, but okay. All right. Well, let's get into this rapid fire, coach. So first thing that comes to mind here as we go through, first one we always like to lead with here is favorite visiting gym or arena.
As a coach or as a player?
Let's do one of both if you have them.
Yeah.
So as a player, I don't know if you guys probably never been to Iowa Wesleyan in Mount Pleasant, you know, just closed down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They had a gym where it probably max capacity was probably 100. And they had a balcony. They had a balcony on top, and that's where all the football players stood. And I'll never forget this story. So my buddy is a point guard. He wasn't a very good shooter. And he's warming up. And it's one of those old gyms. It's like, this is in play and this is out of bounds. Like there isn't, it's time. And this cheerleader was just on him with the mic, with the megaphone, you know, every time he was shooting. And finally he walked over to his partner that was across the way rebounding. He's like, when I hold my hands up, you get ready to pass it. And he stood right in front of that cheerleader with that megaphone and he threw his hands up and here comes the ball and he moves just a little bit to the right. And it just drilled the cheerleader right straight in the face. So that's probably my favorite.
That's great.
Just because they were on you, football guys are spitting on you. You know, it's one of those atmospheres. As a coach, man, this is a tough one. There's just something about, you know, probably Kirkwood, just because I have family that comes to the game. You know, they're able to see, you know, you're going to have a really good game. You're going to play against a really good team, regardless of if Doug Wagamaster's coaching or Brian Peterson or, you know, Tim Sanquist. You know, that's probably, you know, probably one of my favorites, even though it's a tough place to win. I think we've won there maybe two or three times in my career. But it's just close to home, family, and you know what you're going to get. You got to battle.
Awesome.
That's good. Those are good. Two good answers. I like that. All right, what's the best place to eat in Fort Dodge?
My favorite is this Mexican restaurant called Tres Amigos. They have this dish. It's called Mindy's. It's rice, chicken, onions, jalapenos, peppers, and it's smothered with queso.
Oh,
And it's
ooh,
like it's to die for.
yeah.
You know, that's probably my go-to right now.
Tres
That does not
Amigos.
sound
I'll tell
bad.
you. What side of town are we at here on with Tres Amigos?
East side, basically right across the road from Decker Truck Line.
Okay. Good, good. Like that. We're always searching food recommendations, so that's a good one. All right, we kind of teased this one, but who is your Mount Rushmore of Iowa football?
Oh,
Got
man.
four for me. Who do you got? Who are you putting on your Mount Rushmore? I know we didn't mention it in the interview, but Eastern Iowa kid. You talked about kind of Cedar Rapids area, Iowa City, that side of the state. So I know you've been paying attention to the black and gold for quite a while. What do you got for your Mount Rushmore?
One, I would say it has to be Chuck Long.
Okay.
He'd be one. You know, Dallas Clark is probably another, just because I got to know Dallas a little bit when his brother was coaching football here at Iowa Central. You know, a nice guy, obviously. This is going to sound really dumb, but you got to put him on there because of one play. And that would be Rob Houtland kicking the field goal to beat Michigan. I'll never forget that. You know, I can't remember the year. What year was it? 80.
Yeah, 80. Wait, because it wasn't 84 was Rose Bowl season, right? It wasn't 84 or 85, right? I can't remember.
It was at the perfect time when you're a little kid and you're diehard. They win, you're happy. They lose, you're crying. And like, you know, it was in Iowa City, and I just remember that game. You know,
That's a good one.
and it
That's
just,
great.
you just, I don't know. It'll forever be etched. You know, those three, God, fourth.
One more.
Did you say player? Player only?
No, this is Mount Rushmore. You can put a coach on there if you want.
I wouldn't say Kirk Ferentz. I'm a huge Kirk Ferentz guy. You know, obviously he's been the head coach majority of my life. I, you know, grew up with Hayden Fry, but man, Kirk Ferentz, I think he's done a hell of a job. He does it the right way. You know, I mean, he's been getting beat up the last couple of years, and he's pretty steady and consistent, and just keeps on doing what he's doing, you know, just winning games, you know, and producing players, and does it the right way. You know, I think there was a couple years in there where he tried to do it the wrong way and got some knuckleheads in there, and they caused a bunch of trouble in Iowa City, and people didn't like it. And he cleaned it up and got some good guys and got the one, the two, and the three stars, and you know, made them five stars by the time they were done.
I think even more than anything, for Kirk and what he's been able to do is to see so many of these guys start to have so much success in the league. When you think about kind of like you said, you're bringing in these three stars and you're winning 9 games, you're winning 10 games, you maybe are never really sniffing at making the playoff or a national championship run, but now all of a sudden these guys keep showing up on Sundays and keep making impacts. And those were guys that were off the radar when they came into Iowa City. So that speaks volumes of Kirk and his staff and what they're able to do. So that's good. Awesome. That's a good Mount Rushmore. Let's get it going. All right. What's game day routine? Game day, what do you got to do? Is there anything special you got to do this before that? What is your game day routine look like?
My biggest game day routine, and it's probably more superstitious than anything, is I always have butterscotch mints in my pocket. That's kind of my
Nice.
thing that I always have. You know, I used to, when I was an assistant, I used to chew Juicy Fruit all the time. And then when I became a head coach, you know, chewing gum and yelling and all that, I'm like, God, there's gonna be an accident. So now I always just have butterscotch in my pocket. And it's always in my left pocket, my marker is in my right pocket.
That's good.
That's a
I like that.
that's
That's
probably one of the
old
most interesting ones we've heard, to be honest.
That's old school, you know, butterscotch. Who the hell sucks on butterscotch? You know, and I just had my last one do it during
Oh.
this interview, so I got to go get more, obviously.
It's funny you say that because I remember my grandma always having butterscotch just at the house. Just those and a bag of circus peanuts that nobody ever ate were probably 4 years old and rock hard. But
they were just talking about circus peanuts on what was it, Murph and Andy, or on the Morning Rush the other day. How stupid they are, and who eats them, and what is the purpose?
Oh, that's funny.
Why did they bring that up?
I don't even know why they would even make those anymore. Like, those are, like, it's just ridiculous. Like, you can't tell me that in this day of understanding the analytics behind the sales, that those things are still coming off the shelf and people are actually buying circus peanuts. Like, it's like those black and orange Halloween candies that you used to get as kids that nobody ever ate. You usually end up throwing them back at the house that gave them to you. At least they figured that out. I don't think you can buy those anymore. At least I haven't seen them in 5-10 years. So
that's funny.
Yeah. There must be a select group that keeps eating the circus peanuts.
There has to be.
There's got to be a convention out there. If you just Google circus peanut convention, there's one out there somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. You might as well just eat just sidewalk chalk if you're going to go down that.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right, Coach. Favorite sports movie?
I mean, hands down, it's got to be Field of Dreams just because that's where I grew up. You know, it's 5 minutes from my house and used to ride my bike out there with my buddies and, you know, play baseball, screw around, and still go out there every time we get back to Dyersville and take my daughter there. And, you know, it's just, that's home, you know, that's home.
Yeah. That's hard to beat then. Did you get an opportunity to go back when the big leagues was there or not?
Oh, I got, so a lady that used to work at Iowa Central, she's from Dyersville. And she got me tickets to the minor league game when it was there the day before a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I went then, but I never went back to the major league game.
That was neat. The whole thing, everything about that whole setup and what they've done and the ability to continue to bring that to a spotlight is awesome and well-deserved. So that's really neat. All right, Coach Fimo, we'll get you out of here. All-time starting five. Who you rolling out there?
First one would be a guy my first year. His name was Sullivan Sykes. He was like 6'4", freak athlete. He was from New Orleans, Louisiana. He went on to play at St. Joe in Indiana, Division II. Really good player. Next guy would probably be Clay Rowe. He's 6'4". 6'4 kid that had an unbelievable motor. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. Matter of fact, I think he just turned 40 and still plays in that 3X or 3-on-3, whatever they call that.
Really?
Yeah,
he still plays all over the country, you know, all over the United States, all over the world, still playing in it, still making money doing that.
Wow.
Nick Ford, obviously, is another one, you know, just, you know, like we talked earlier, just a really good shooter, you know, really solid high IQ basketball player, can play multiple positions. Terrell Parks, he was just inducted into the Hall of Fame, played here, played at Western Illinois, was all Summit League, had a really good career, just matter of fact, retired from playing professionally. And then probably the best player there's two of them that are pretty, really close. I'll give you six. You know, Kurt Alexander was a guard. He was from Canada, came here, went to Drake. Just a tough ass dude, you know, just a tough dude. You know, not a great 3-point shooter, but man, he lived and died on the mid-range jump shot and you know, scored at a high clip from there. And then probably the last one would be Trey Croft. He's probably the best player that's ever played at Iowa Central. You know, he's the all-time leading scorer, you know, signed at UNI and then finished up at Parkside, Wisconsin Parkside. Just a little bitty guard, lefty, tough, not very big, but man, he was a competitor, you know, and probably all six of those guys, you know, they high IQs and just never had a bad day in practice. that's probably the biggest thing that stands out to those guys, you know, is they never had a bad day, you know, in practice, you know, and it just carries over to games. You know, you set yourself up, you know, you have really good days of practice, man, you're going to have really good games. You have bad days of practice, you never know when you're going to be good, and you're more likely going to be bad more than you are going to be good, you know, if you just not consistent.
That's yeah, and that we talk about it on the pod all the time, but making that jump from high school to college practice is obviously the biggest thing, and being able, like you said, to come every single day. Like, it's anybody can get up, get jacked up for a game, and you know, show up and play really well, but it's like, can you roll out there on an early Wednesday, you know, and compete and get better? And that's where you separate yourself from everybody else. And so no surprise that some of those players make not only your all-time starting five, but also because they work hard and are good practice players as well. All right, Coach, two more. I'll get you out of here. Power rank your top three gas stations in Iowa for me.
Hy-Vee Market Fresh, without a doubt, is number one.
Love it.
Live and die. We don't have one in town, but my daughter plays travel softball. Man, I can find those things like a bird dog. Man, that's number one. I'm still old school. I love Casey's. You know, I'm fully not into Quick Star yet. Just something about it. You know, but they're probably – Quick Star is probably three, but Hy-Vee, Market Fresh, and Casey's are four, five, six steps ahead of Quick Star in my eyes.
And you guys got that – it's newer, that Quick Star across from Casey's there near campus, right? And that just come in. Yep.
They're trying to make you. They're trying to make you into a coach.
No, I just can't do it. Just can't do it. I don't know what it is. I just don't. I, you know.
Not buying the hype yet, huh?
Change is hard.
Yeah, you know, and part of it is the you know, there's a Casey's right on the corner of campus, and then obviously the Quick Star's across. I think if the Quick Star and the Casey's were switched locations, Casey's would be out of business just out of pure convenience. You got to stop at a stoplight. You got to wait, all that stuff.
Yep.
And maybe that's why I don't go to that Quick Star, because it's a pain to get back to campus.
Yep.
But it's just Casey's, man. It's Iowa. It's Iowa. You got to support right. Iowa. You got to back
up. Yeah. That's about as Iowa as it gets right there. So that's good. We always like some fun ones like that. So, all right, Coach, last one, and then we'll get you out of here. You know, you talked a lot about it along the way here, but you know, you've been in Iowa Central a long time. It sounds like there's a lot of things in which that you really enjoy about what you're doing and where you're at. But if we had to, what is the best thing about getting the opportunity to be the head coach at Iowa Central?
It's doing something that I truly love to do, and I'm probably not smart enough to do anything else, you know, and you know, but coaching basketball, coaching a sport, trying to teach these guys life lessons that are going to carry on well past they're done playing, you know, is truly what I like to do. It's having guys come in the office and just sit and BS about anything, not even basketball related, you know. This guy's coming in and talking about the NFL or the NBA or whatever. It's, you know, it's like I said earlier, I get older, they stay the same age, but it helps me stay younger, you know. It kind of keeps me in the loop of music, even though I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a big rap guy or a today's hits guy. I'm a country guy, you know, but I still can listen to some of that stuff and style, clothing, shoes. You know, all that stuff. I'm not rocking the classic dads yet, you know, or doing any of that stuff, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just enjoying what I do. Yeah, it's good when you win. It's the end of the world when you lose. But, you know, it's just coming to work every day and enjoying these guys and being around guys and trying to make a difference in their life.
all of the things that come with coaching, obviously the waves and the roller coasters, with just the hope and the perspective of understanding that, you know, each and every day making a difference. And it sounds like you have a good perspective and understanding of that. And coach, we wish you the very best of luck here this year and moving forward. We'll obviously keep an eye on things and how everything's going for you. We'll check in with you as well. We appreciate you taking some time and chatting with us, and good luck here the rest of the year.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Anytime you want to talk, you know, obviously we're what, an hour and a half in. I told you I talk, you know, anytime.
That's coaches.
To talk about anything, you know, don't be afraid to give me a holler.
We will do that, coach. Thanks again for your time. As Brian said, excited for the upcoming season, excited to follow along, and looking forward to hopefully making it to a couple games this year. So best of luck.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.